my name is Paul Greatrix, and welcome to the latest edition of the My Imaginary University podcast. In this edition, we hear from Jenny Shaw, Higher Education External Engagement Director at Unite Students, who's developed an imaginary university which is genuinely intended for everyone and can be found everywhere. The University for Everyone is a distributed national operation which takes elements of the Open University, the Workers Educational Association, and community organisers to come up with a very broad range of offerings suitable for everyone who is curious and wants to learn something. Nothing is standard, and lots of material can be drawn from other providers as learners define their own course, supported by a learning mentor, but always with a purpose. Funding comes from a variety of sources, some of them very entrepreneurial, and the university is very open to collaboration with similar institutions as it seeks to reach all educationally underserved parts of the UK, both rural and urban. Jenny is a pretty relaxed Vice-Chancellor who lives the university's values and believes strongly in the importance of the Student Union, but she's keen to ensure there is a strong internal regulatory framework too. Most importantly, the university and its members are going to spend a good deal of time working through all the challenges of the moment in relation to free speech and respectful dialogue. It's a genuinely novel and wide-ranging offer, and the university's anthem is one which will surprise everyone, I'm quite sure. I really hope you enjoy it. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of My Imaginary University. And this time it's my huge pleasure to introduce Jenny Shaw. Jenny is the Higher Education External Engagement Director at Unite Students and someone with a great pedigree in the higher education sector, and is going to come up with an exciting imaginary university for us. So welcome, Jenny. I hope this hasn't been too nerve-wracking in preparing your thoughts.
Oh, it's been good. It's been a great exercise.
Good. Well, we'll jump straight in. And just to be clear, I've got no idea really what Jenny's going to come up with. So we will hand straight over to her and invite her to give us an outline of what her imaginary university is. So Jenny, tell us the big picture.
I will. So my imaginary university is something for everyone. And after looking at various different options for a title, I've just decided to call it the University for Everyone. Anyone who wants to do something for themselves, and especially something for their community or people around them, wherever they are, wherever they're starting from, it should be a university for them. And I think particularly for people and for communities who don't have enough influence at the moment over research priorities, about our concept of valid knowledge, people who don't have a voice in public policy, the institutions, the processes that they engage in with on a regular basis, it's for them.
How does it work in practice? And is it a kind of traditional university campus with lots of buildings in near a city, or is it a number of different locations? And you know, and how are these people engaging with it?
So it's everywhere. So wherever people are, that's where it starts. So I suppose in terms of what we already have in the sector, it's going to be a little bit like the Open University. It's national, it's dispersed, it brings the learning to the people. It will have central services, but the main learning is going to take place in community locations, in hubs, online, lots of different modes. But it also brings in elements of two organisations that are not universities. So very inspired by the Workers Education Association, which just takes learning to the people where they are. And certainly my granddad, and I think a lot of people's granddads, owe a lot to this. And the other organisation, which is quite different, is Community Organisers, which follows the interests and the ambitions of people. So that's what I want for my university. It should start with what people want to do and what they feel that they could do if things had been different and if they could only learn this and only learn that. So you can, this is one of the big differences. You can take a program that is tailored to your journey. So in the sense it doesn't have a campus, but its campus is everywhere.
Oh, right. Okay. So I absolutely, I think, getting the kind of, I've not heard of community organisers, but obviously familiar with the Workers' Education Association, which has this very long history, as you mentioned, and obviously the Open University. So I can kind of imagine a kind of combination of all of those things. So presumably then it is kind of straddling what we might traditionally call further education as well as higher education, in terms of the offer and other things as well, which are non-accredited, and is it as kind of broad as that?
In a way. So it definitely has that vertical integration. So there will be a full further education offer, and that will be purposeful. In terms of what's accredited, I think because I've spent quite a lot of time hanging around centres for lifelong learning and centres for work-based learning, I know that you can accredit a lot of stuff. So any kind of purposeful activity where someone is learning something, you can accredit that. So I think that's going to be a really key feature. And I th probably, and Open University does some of that, but I think that probably will be a real feature of my university because it's got to be based on what people want to do. And where they want to take it and what they want to create.
And presumably the kind of disciplinary base is very broad as well,
Very
because
big, yeah.
if someone wants to do archaeology and someone else wants to do zoology, you're gonna try and cover all those bases, are you?
I think to an extent, I think if someone wants to do a really standard course, there might not be a benefit in coming to this university because you could get that somewhere else. But if you have an idea and you want to pursue it, even though you don't know necessarily where it's going, this should be the university that can take you on that journey. I can tell you a story about one of my students. So I've thought of this through.
Yeah,
Okay.
go for it.
I've got a story of Sam, whose kids went to school and Sam didn't really know what they wanted to do, but they just wanted to support their children's learning. So they had a meeting with their learning mentor at the University of Everyone, and just started with a bit of a refresher, getting their confidence back, but really enjoyed it. So they kept going, and they eventually qualified to be a teaching assistant. So that's quite a standard course. But one of our core values in this university is curiosity. So that was something that was really instilled by their learning mentor. So over time, they noticed that there were in the school where their kids were, there were a lot of neurodivergent students, but not very good provision for them. So what they did, they discussed it with their learning mentor and took some relevant courses and started to offer some special provision for the children. And then carried on their learning. So every time they take a step in this, every time they put in an application for funding or speak at a conference or do a podcast, they can get some benefit from that in terms of their learning and carry on their journey. So that's it. It's kind of you kind of become a member, and once you're a member, you can keep adding to your learning journey.
Right. Okay. And so it's very much kind of if I can a very exploratory curriculum and very much designed to respond to the interest of
It is.
the student at whatever level and whatever area they want to develop it, right? Rather than as you say, rather than the kind of more traditional standard curricula. Okay, I get that. So how and you mentioned a learning mentor there. So how are these how are you staffing the operation is what I'm getting at. I can see lots
Well.
of people would be attracted to being involved in that kind of activity in the same way as lots of people were in times past passionate about continuing education, about adult education, and as you say, about the WEA.
Well, that's I think that's going to evolve over time. I'm really cool about bundling and unbundling content. So for fairly standard chunks of learning, there's no reason to deliver that ourselves. I mean, we can draw on MOOCs, we can draw on, stuff that's out there already. Absolutely no reason to deliver that in-house. And AI as well. I mean, over the next 5, 10 years, let's have a look at what AI can do in terms of teaching personalized courses. So for content, I think that's going to be a very flexible model. I think where the difference is going to be is in mentoring people to map out their learning journey piece by piece, and also to accredit what they're doing.
So you will actually have some people.
Yeah, we'll have some people. I think there needs to be a really good student support offer. Will there be faculties? I don't know. I don't know.
But okay, right. But you will have some kind of, however organized, it might be loose, it might be more coordinated, kind of staffing, provision, network, etc., who will be, doing the, in broad terms, the kind of things that you want them to do in terms of facilitating the learning of your students. And you mentioned kind of student support. So there will be somewhere, presumably there is some, and you as the boss of the organization will be sitting somewhere directing this somehow. Where's the HQ? Is there an HQ, or is that all distributed as well?
I think there needs to be an HQ. Yeah, I think there does. But I think there need to be staff across the UK and potentially across the world. I mean, this is not necessarily just in the UK. This could be global.
And of course, impossible to rank. In the same way
We're
as
not about the rankings.
you're not gonna worry about this, because I mean, it is a, genuinely distinctive national or indeed international offer. So in terms of the scale, then, I mean, it's everywhere. That's quite easy to say. But if you were to add up all those staff and all those students, how many, do you think that you will be reaching?
I don't know, because it's a new market, isn't it? It's we're going after all the people who are not going to university. We're not trying to take a market share off someone else. So I'm talking about it as if it exists, and it definitely exists in my mind. But yeah, there's 50% of the UK population who don't and haven't gone to university. So that could be quite big.
So I mean, we talked about the kind of levels of stuff that you do. I mean, are you going up to higher level qualifications as well? Are you involved in, are any of the staff involved in any kind of research? I mean, if you've got students who are developing particularly novel lines of inquiry around neurodivergency, etc., is there a, a community within the institution that they're engaging with as well, potentially, which are more concerned with, kind of broader research activity in that area, for example?
Will there be research active staff? I don't know the answer to that. I think there will definitely be research active students. So, yeah, we'd need to think about how they were properly supervised, but it would be very practical research. But I think it could go. And again, all this is based on stuff that I've seen being done in small scale. But I think, yeah, there could be research up to doctoral level, but it would be very applied, very practical. And I think there could be other kinds of outputs as well. I mean, once you start engaging with different cultures and different types of knowledge, you could create all kinds of things, couldn't you? New art forms, new performing arts, new products. So I think that sort of skips over into that, what do they call it these days? Sort of knowledge transfer and all that sort of side of things.
I'm going to ask you a difficult question now, which is, but I'm sure you will have an answer for it, which is in terms of the kind of financial base of the institution. How is it actually funded then? Have you got a series of very generous benefactors who are supporting this activity, or is it a, direct taxation?
So I think it should qualify for sort of standard funding as a university, either through further education or higher education funding arrangements. However, I do think that there would be, I think it would be attractive to benefactors. It might be attractive to industry, although we'd have to make sure that there weren't too many conditions on that. And I think it would be really attractive to government as well, because if you've got an engine that really, if it was successful, if it's successful, I'm getting terribly serious here, but if it's successfully engaged people who government found very hard to engage, and they were looking at the problems within their communities on their own terms, you'd get some really interesting novel solutions that wouldn't be very easy for governments to generate in any other way. Now, I'm assuming that they're going to be good solutions, but let's assume that, because this is my imaginary university. So I think government would want to buy into it once it had proved itself.
And but presumably also, given the highly localized nature of lots of the activity as well, local government as well as local communities will be excited about this.
I
And I
hope
must
so.
admit, I've been guilty about thinking this, thinking of it in a very entirely in a kind of urban context. But actually, thinking in the context of, villages and towns in areas which are not well served by higher education or indeed education, you could absolutely see this model, working in village halls and church halls up and down the land, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could. And one of my inspirations was the work that I did many years ago in North Yorkshire, and what the Open University were doing there, and with other university partners, just bringing learning to people where they were, whether that was a tiny little 10 pupil primary school in the middle of the moor then. And it was really effective. But it's also inspired by what was happening in London in terms of work-based learning, and how that was really kind of reinvigorating small businesses as well. So maybe lots of ideas coming together, but I think what it's got in common, it kind of challenges what we think of as university and what could be mainstream work for a university, because these things have all been happening, but very much on the margins, very much small scale.
So, I mean, we've mentioned the Open University a number of times, and they obviously have an ongoing existence and fulfill a particular role in the UK higher education landscape. I mean, I kind of get the impression that you're going into space that they've vacated rather than actually parking your tents on their lawn. Or, you're not looking to kill the Open University, are you? I hope.
No, because I think there are aspects to it which are broader than what they do. I would like to think that I could persuade them to come on board and be a partner in it. But this is not just my idea. This is
So it's a
bringing a
kind of
load of things
collaborative
together. It's like a
opportunity.
collaborative opportunity.
So given your collaborative ethos then, what kind of, and I'm assuming you will be the vice chancellor or principal of this august organisation, so what kind of vice chancellor will you actually be, Jenny?
I want to be a real chill vice chancellor. I want to uphold the values, and I've thought about what the values are of this
Oh,
university,
please, yes, share that.
because actually, the way it's described and the kind of structure it has, it could easily be hijacked, I think, by particular ideologies, and I don't want that. So the values are curiosity, respect, and kindness. So I want to be the vice chancellor that upholds those and models those, and also maintains strong ethics around what we do. But also, and again, I've been really inspired by, some very, very small outfits doing learning in a community. You've got to be the chief cheerleader. Now, how you do that at a national or an international level, I don't know, but I will find out, because it's got to be it's got to be an institution that really celebrates the students, because a lot of them will be people who've never been celebrated in that way before.
No, I get the genuine inclusivity of it. I mean, I think you're right to be nervous about the hijacking, because when you have a very diffuse organization and you're depending on lots of people buying into those values, and it's actually quite difficult to genuinely police it, right? Because actually lots of, hundreds and thousands of different things are happening all over the place at the same time. So potentially the Blackpool branch could go off down a completely different route, which you might not be very happy with. But it's kind of difficult to come back from that, isn't it? But that's
It is.
part of what being a university, if it wasn't happening on that dispersed scale, it would be happening on a campus, and you'd be having a stand-up argument in the common room at, in a campus. So it's just a different form of the same thing, perhaps.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things I've learned from the private sector is that you can do kind of culture and values really well, and you can make them stick. So I'm going to take a little bit of that learning in as well.
Excellent, excellent. I mean, you talked a bit about students, and you mentioned student support and the way in which you're empowering students, etc. One of the things that those traditional universities do have, and indeed the Open University does have as well, is a student union. I mean, and that's a kind of traditional way of enabling students to organise themselves, but also to provide support for students as members of the institution, and to represent the voice of students to, people like yourself as vice chancellor and other senior leaders within the organisation, as well as providing, social and fun stuff too. Is there a student union for, is there a student union for everyone? It doesn't really work, does it?
Well, whatever there is, it has to be for everyone. I've been round and round on this because I'm trying to, like most things with this, I'm trying to sort of pare it back to what's the purpose of it and how will it work in this really different kind of context. So definitely there needs to be proper representation of students and feedback. They need to be empowered to make change. I would really like to see them having a meaningful role in governance and management, and I think we could work out something, quite unusual here. But also, I think it goes beyond that. I think that what we're talking about here is an empowered group of students being the engine of innovation and creativity around their own learning and what they're creating through that. But I think they should feel that they have a way to bring that within the university and help to kind of co-create it as well.
Oh right, so because I must admit, but thinking that you're going to struggle to have a student body like this, but actually no, I can see how you could make it work and make it genuinely empowering as well. So I mean, I do think, I mean, I personally think it's a really important facet of an organisation that does call itself a university to have that structure, however different, for students to organise themselves and enable their voice to be part of the organisation. So I do think that's really important. Hard to organize, kind of representative sport, though. I'm imagining that's going to be kind of tricky, but you can't have everything, can you?
I'd be interested to know. I should have looked into this really, but I'd be interested to know what the Open University does. But if there's concentrations of students in key cities, they can, they should be empowered to organise stuff for themselves. That would be really good.
Excellent, excellent. So, are there? I mean, there are many distinctive features of the university for everyone that we've already covered. I'm just wondering if there are other things that we might have missed. I mean, effectively, no, there's no campus. So there aren't any kind of residential facilities for students at all, are there? It's not operating in anything like that way. It's Are there centres, though, where people do go away for extended periods of residential study? Because again, in the old days, that's what the Open University used to do as well in the summer.
I think there could be. Yeah, I think there could be. It depends on what people are learning and whether they need to be. So there might be, well, it's a bit of a cliche, but if you're doing some kind of sort of business stuff or something, very interactive where it's skills based. You're going to need to bring people together. So you could, and you might get people from all different kinds of walks of life, different courses, different programs coming together on that. That would be really interesting, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that was always, I mean, I never did an OU course, but I worked on a campus which had frequent OU summer schools. And clearly part of the benefit of that for participants was mingling with people from around the country who were doing a similar subject area to them and learning from each other, but also socializing with people that they would never have come across in their normal lives. And that kind of bringing together of people, I think, is hugely powerful, and lifelong bonds were made at these events as well. So I think that power is something that shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah, and it's very in line with the ethos and the values as well to bring people together and be curious about them and respectful and being kind. So, yeah, I think that would do it. I mean, it all sounds very ethereal, I suppose, but I would really envisage there being a strong framework sitting underneath it, which enables all these things and enables all that. And again, I've seen this done on a smaller scale. You have a really strong academic framework and sort of rules of engagement, and from that people can, have ultimate flexibility, and that you might find thousands of people wanting to do the same thing and you can service that, and you might find people doing unique courses and you can support that as well.
No, I completely get that. I do think you're absolutely right, though, because you do need that framework to, which is an enabling framework to ensure that people are confident that what they're doing fits within something that will, at the end of the day, count. And everyone has got to be assured of the value of the learning that they're undertaking and that they're then being recognised for. And that's important for them in the future as well as while they're doing it, and important for everyone in the country to understand, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I'm glad we've nailed that one.
I have to say, though, I'm going to be employing some really great people who can put this together because I've got the vision. I know my limitations. So I'm going to get the best. I mean, I believe you're looking for a job at the moment, Paul. So,
Well, yeah, I could be persuaded, Jenny. Well, I mean, I think it's fascinating because if you think about, I mean, certainly all those institutions that came out of the CNA tradition, the former polytechnics, were used to abiding by a set of rules and regulations which were shared across the institutions. And they've been arrived at over, 20, 30 years of practice and experimentation and collective judgment. And actually, again, born on the from the the longer traditions of the established universities, but nevertheless, they had their own character and flavour. But they were very much about enabling, and
They
that, so
really
they
were.
were. But they were robust, and they were. Everyone had confidence in them. So I think there are still plenty of people about, not just me, who remember that approach, and you could employ to help train the next generation of regulators within the organisation.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, definitely. Let's all power to the bureaucrats. Are there other fun dimensions of the institution that we haven't mentioned yet, Jenny, that we need to cover?
I mean, I'm aware it's been a bit serious now, but I think it should be quite fun as well. I mean, on the sort of serious side of the fun spectrum, I think it's going to surprise us what will come out of it. I'm talking about this is going to happen. But I think there could be really fascinating research clusters and subject clusters just emerging, because when you start to engage with people who haven't engaged with universities before, you've got to be completely open to what they're bringing in, and what they care about and what they want to do. So I think that there could be some incredibly interesting stuff coming out of there. On the fun side of that, I think we ought to have our own record label, our own publishing house, and our own podcast at the very least. to just to deal with all the incredible creativity that people are coming up with. We can put out new music, new forms of music, new ideas.
That's terrific. And given the scale of the organisation and the number of students involved, I can imagine that turning into a pretty big deal.
I would think so, yeah, and I think that's another way it'd be funded.
Yeah, no,
Not that there's
absolutely.
any money in
Excellent.
music anymore, but you know, we can dream.
But if you get, scale might make it work. But anyway, I think that the idea is a very novel one, but it is a way of genuinely engaging everyone who in the university and in being creative and also producing outputs of an entertaining note. So I think that's fantastic. So are you, it's all lovely and wonderful. Are you banning anything? A number of universities, particularly in the US, ban loads of stuff, and obviously the way that the US is going at the moment, lots of things are going to be banned in universities. Bearing in mind that it is imaginary and you are an omnipotent vice chancellor, albeit a very nice one. But are you banning anything?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to. So I'm going to give a short answer, and then I'm going to give a long answer. So the short answer is you're not allowed to put limits on yourself or anyone else. So okay, that's the starting point. Other than that, the serious side of this is, okay, we are working out as a world just how to be in terms of, you know, what should be banned and what shouldn't be banned, what you can talk about, what you can say, what you can think. We're going to have to find a way through. And I think I want to get all the best boffins in my university really to work this out. And it's got to be a position where, you know, we can talk about things openly and freely without having to necessarily cancel people, but for people still to feel safe and respected. So, you know, I'm again trying to solve the big issues of our day that no one else has managed to. But we're going to have to, aren't we? So, yeah, I can't answer what we're going to ban until we've really looked into it. But I feel like because this is the university for everyone, you know, maybe we've got a chance. Maybe we've got a chance of solving that one.
And everyone will have a have an input into determining that.
Well, not literally everyone, because
Well,
we'll be there forever. You know,
no.
can we be kind? Can we be respectful? Can we be not sentimental? Can we challenge but still be compassionate? Can we listen but not necessarily endorse? You know, all those things.
Great. Well, and very productive extracurricular activity for everyone there as well. And finally, and this is arguably the most important issue of all, and you've touched on your desire for the creative side of things and for making music, but what's the anthem? What's the song that will be most closely associated with the University for Everyone when everyone's graduating at their local theatre or concert hall?
Okay, I'm laughing because this is very counterintuitive, but go with me on this because I'm going to explain it. It is Ghost Town by The Specials.
Oh
Okay,
my goodness.
right. So the reasons are, first of all, The Specials were a very diverse band. They seem to have a very inclusive mindset, so we like that. They diagnosed the social problems of the early 1980s and they put it into 120 words and turned it into a massive banger. So, they turning a problem into something of value is really what we're about. And just, you know, it's a banger. We love it. So, something else I thought, this is a very Generation X song, okay? Now we're the generation that's sandwiched between the generations that gave us critical theory, which is great, and the generations that invented wokeness. And we're the people sitting there in the middle of it saying, all right, lads, well, what are we going to do about this? So I think that my university, in a very long-winded way, kind of answers that. So we're going to do stuff about it. We see the problems. We're going to do stuff about it. And I would just love to produce something as amazing as Ghost Town by the Specials. There we go.
Well, that would certainly be a very distinctive tune
It
to
would,
play at a
wouldn't it?
graduation event. But
It
I
makes
think
me laugh. It makes me laugh.
it would require an element of explanation. I think, but as you say, an absolute banger, and certainly one that the university should be proud to be associated with.
I love the
I think.
idea of playing it and not even explaining it. I think that would be really good. I think that would just sort of exemplify our sort of no explanations, no apologies.
It would certainly create debate in the in the staff and student and indeed relative community. Jenny,
Which
we
is
need
a
to stop
good
there, but
thing.
that's been absolutely fantastic. It's a really novel creation and one that I'm sure the country and indeed the world needs at this time. So let's hope that somewhere, somehow, some benefactor is thinking, "Yep, that's a good idea," and
Know where I am.
we'll go with it. So thank you again.
Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.
Well, I do hope you enjoyed that episode of My Imaginary University. There'll be more along before you know it. In the meantime, you might want to listen to the sister podcast, University Registrars Talking About Stuff, in which I chat to university leaders and registrars and others like that, all about their experiences of higher education. Just Google it. Also, you may want to visit my website, wonderfulhighered.com. Where you can find lots of entertaining stuff all about the strange, wonderful, and frightening world of higher education. Anyway, until the next time, thank you for listening.